Do you guys remember Jay from the Subway videos? I basically said he believed in zodiac signs and chakras and third eyes. See, I'm someone who doesn't really believe in that sort of stuff. Oh, hey, Black Zen.
Hey, James.
So Jay was trying to teach me about energies and vibrations, and he told me about this YouTube channel called Infinite Waters, parentheses, Diving Deep. Now on this channel, you will see videos like What I Eat in a Day as a Vegan, How to Stop Burning Bridges with People, 7 Amazing Tips That Will Turn You into a Self-Loving Whiz. But he also has videos like How to Open Your Third Eye. So I don't necessarily agree with everything he says on his videos, but I really like him and you should check him out. And the creator of these videos, named Ralph, I just love how he starts off every single video. He goes, "Peace, infinite waters, diving deep once again. Can I get a hello there?" And it is super peaceful and I recommend it. And on a lot of his videos, he talks about doing a
7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge, 7-day vegan challenge.
You know, for the amount of times you bring up
the 7-day vegan challenge,
you'd think it would solve all your problems, which is why I, James, have decided to partake in the 7-day vegan challenge. But I'm going to call it the 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Solves all your problems. Can't get enough sleep? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Can't find your car keys? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. People keep interrupting you? You wanna die? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. All these lame-o pleb YouTubers doing these lame-o pleb challenges, like, why does this exist? While they're doing this, I'm actually going out of my way to suffer for a whole week for views. I did some research into what was vegan, and apparently Reese's Puffs and Oreos are vegan.
Well, this is gonna be super easy.
As of recording this, I have already completed the 7-day vegan challenge, and I've kinda delayed making this video because being a vegan has changed me. So while I was doing the 7-day vegan challenge, I wrote this log after each day. I'm not gonna read all of it, just the first and last day of the challenge, because days 2 through 6 can pretty much be summed up in So this is what I wrote at the end of day 1. My rations are already very low. I was not prepared for this. I'm the kind of person that will snack on Cheez-Its and trail mix throughout the day. But now I can't do that, because I had to think of the freaking animals. Every time I'm around food, I just have to keep screaming, "Vegan, vegan," in my mind so I won't unconsciously take a handful of Cheez-Its. I went shopping for food today, and everything I wasn't allowed to eat looked super good. I was even craving the food that I've never bought before, like Hot Pockets. Who likes Hot Pockets? I accidentally bought bread that contained honey, which I don't know if that's vegan or not. If you've learned anything from the Bee Movie, is that bees have no purpose if they're not making honey. I'm in for a long week. I'm already fantasizing about what I'll eat as soon as the challenge is over. I'm thinking of 4x4 from In-N-Out. I'll try to write tomorrow. And then after that long week was over, this is what I wrote for day 7. In a few hours, all my problems will be fixed, and I will be an immortal being. But I'm gonna throw that all away because tomorrow I'm gonna drink milk again. I've completed the vegan challenge, but I don't feel that accomplished. The best way I can think to describe what I'm feeling is, oh, it's over. I remember when I started the challenge, I was thinking about all the food I was going to eat once I was done, but now I'm just not craving anything. Still, though, I'm probably never going to do this again. While I was doing the challenge, I went to Sprouts and bought microwavable veggie burgers, and when I cooked them up, they smelled like throw-up. So see if you can tell how much I was trying to hold back throwing up in this video.
So today, we were going to try these veggie burgers, and as I was cooking it, it sort of smelled like throw-up. That almost made me throw up. So we have the burgers and tomatoes, lettuce. Oh, okay. I'm really hungry right now. Here's a veggie burger. Okay. I think we're gonna try this. We're gonna try and eat this. Hopefully, it, you know, tastes better than it smells.
By the way, that was vegan cheese in the video. I didn't just put normal cheese on the veggie burger, guys. Okay, I'm not a heartless creature. I care about cows. You know, the internet really loves to just hate on vegans. But I don't think it's as bad as the internet makes it out to be. Of course, there will always be jerks in any group of people. And you shouldn't think that you're better than someone else just because of what you eat. Also, I want to mention that while I did the vegan challenge, I would lose my breath just by going up the stairs. Some vegans would probably say that I was malnourished. And I probably was. This video is probably going to get some downvotes from some angry vegans, even though I'm about to compliment them. I think it takes a lot of self-control to do what vegans do. I don't know why anyone would purposely do that. I admire anyone that puts so much care and thought into their diet. I mean, ever since the challenge was finished, I've been trying to eat healthier, and I don't want to brag or anything, but I bought whole wheat waffles the other day, so I can feel my bones getting stronger. So, in conclusion, unfortunately, the 7-day vegan challenge, baby, solves all your problems, did not solve all my problems. But even if it did solve all my problems, I still probably wouldn't be vegan. I would still drink milk, you know, because that's what makes ice cream and cheese and nachos. You think I'm exaggerating, but no, you would have to pay me a very pretty penny to get me to be full vegan. Like, no joke, a minimum of $1 billion. Am I glad I did the 7-day vegan challenge? Yes, I am.
Then we got some organic pancake syrup. I think pancake syrup itself is organic too, but we're just going to eat it again. Where does it say it? Non-GMO. 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 I haven't had a GMO in days.
I think that everyone at some point in their life should work in a fast food or retail job. Not to improve their work ethic or anything, but so that everyone knows what it's like to have that kind of job. They wouldn't work in fast food their whole lives, maybe just like for 6 months, just so they get a feel for it. So with that, let's talk about the time when I worked in fast food. I used to work at a very small local sandwich shop. I don't know if any of you guys heard of it. It's called Subway. Our spokesperson was in the news recently. I don't know if you guys look at the news. Did you hear he got beat up in jail? I kinda wanna meet the person who beat up Jared more than Jared. Not in person. We wouldn't meet in person, obviously. But like, he would be behind bars, and I would just look at the guy who beat up my spokesperson. How many people get to say that they beat up a fast food icon who is also a pedophile? Only one, and it's that guy. Okay, but seriously guys, working at Subway was probably one of the most easiest jobs out there. I don't know why I'm about to complain about it to you guys. We got free cookies. And you know the comic with the Subways in Hell? I was actually working at Subway when I made that comic. I just think it adds sort of a little bit of value to it. You see, the owners, who are husband and wife, can you believe it, of the Subway I worked at owned two stores. One of the Subway stores was in a Walmart on an Indian reservation, because we have those in Arizona, and the other Subway was the Subway I worked at. And since the Walmart store was always busy, the owners would spend 99% of their time at that store. So I didn't really have a boss most of the time. On the off chance the owners did show up, they would just pick up some food and then they would make sure I was making sandwiches the right way. And every time I made a sandwich in front of them, they would always find something wrong with it, without fail. You put on too many olives. Do you know according to the Subway formula, you're only supposed to put on 8 olives on a foot long? 8! One for every other bite. That's just ridiculous. Can you imagine someone just counting out 8 olives? Nobody does that. I usually worked the closing shift, and at the end of the night, we would turn the alarm and we have 60 seconds to get out of the store. But one time I had the opening shift, so I unlocked the door to get in with my key, and the alarm went beep, beep, meaning I had 60 seconds to turn it off. No big deal, right? I've turned the alarm on all the time when I was closing. So I go to the little control panel, and I type in the code, and nothing happens. The beeping is still there, and the clock is still ticking down. So I go, okay, I'm going to press each button very carefully. I'm going to make sure each button makes a beep when I press it. Beep, beep, beep. Nothing still happens. So I go, okay, I'm going to make sure to press each button very carefully. And I start thinking, did they change the passcode without telling me? Well, this is the only passcode I know, so we're just going to try it again. And I press each button very carefully. Beep. 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 And it goes quiet. And then the alarm goes off. I still had like 20 seconds left. But I guess when you get it wrong 3 times, it automatically assumes that you're a burglar. So while the alarm is going off, I look on the contact sheet for the owner's cell phone number. I step outside, I call him, and he doesn't pick up. So I go back inside, find the number for the other Subway store. They open an hour before we do. Someone picks up with their stupid voice. Oh, thank you for calling Subway. I'm blah, 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 blah. How may I help you? And I go, hey, is Mike there? It's not his real name, guys. Don't worry. And they go, just a minute. Yeah, sure. I have all the time in the world. The cops might be on their way, but take your time. So Mike picks up. Yellow. Hey, Mike, this is James. What's the passcode for the alarm? Who is this? It's James. What's the passcode? What are you doing there, James? Why aren't you answering the question? I have the opening shift. Is the alarm going off? Yeah, no one told me the new code. Yeah, we changed it. It's the last four digits of your social security number.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Mike.
I don't know my social security number. So I finally get the alarm off. No one showed up, thankfully. Which I actually don't know if that's a good thing or not, now that I say it out loud. We did have a store manager who would, like, make the schedule and sometimes tell us, hey, can you guys do a better job at your job? But other than that, she was cool. She watches my videos, and so do her little brothers. They're big fans. Shout out to Ivan and Andy. Those are the brothers. So get this. At Subway, you only work with one other person. Just you and them in an empty Subway for 5 hours. I mean, we weren't, like, empty all the time. Okay. And when you're not making sandwiches, you have other stuff to do, like stocking the chips, or we had stuff to do. But okay, we did watch a lot of Netflix and do homework, so I mean, it was that other person you worked with would make or break your entire shift. It wasn't the annoying customers. I kind of got used to annoying customers. So I worked with a lot of crappy people. And I also worked with a lot of people who I would probably never become friends with except in a work setting. You see, you gotta understand the type of people who got jobs at Subway. Potheads. Most of them are potheads. And some of them are really cool. I'm just going to go over a couple of the characters that I worked with. There was Tyler. I freaking love this guy. He smoked a lot of weed. He actually taught me what vaping was, and he got me into Clash of Clans. I actually mentioned him and his girlfriend in my riddles video. I don't know if I ever told him that. And of course, I have to mention Corey. He was cool. We watched How to Get Away with Murder on Netflix, and I've also hung out with him outside of work. What him and Tyler had in common is that they would actually do their job, which you gotta appreciate. Then there was this guy. Get this, who was also named Jared. He loved marble, and that's, like, the only thing he would talk about. I can say these things. He doesn't watch my videos. There was Sarah. She was cool. She made me a bread bowl. And her boyfriend, Jay. He talked about chakras and third eyes. He was interesting. And also, there's Anthony. He's cool. What's up, Anthony? For the 100,000 sprinkles video, I actually went back to Subway to use their scale because I knew they had one. And we counted 500 sprinkles again just to be more accurate for the 100,000. And Anthony helped me count. Instead of working. I mean, at least he got paid minimum wage for it. So two more stories before I go. One time, Jared asked me to take out this pile of trash, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll just put this pile of trash in the dumpster. And as I was taking it out, I saw that there was a chip poster in the pile, and I thought, this is too cool to throw away. I'm gonna keep it. So I took it home with me, and then the next day when I went in, people were saying, oh, where's the chip poster? We can't find the chip poster. We haven't seen it anywhere. And I'm thinking, I have the poster. I decided not to tell anyone that I had the poster, and it's still hanging up in my room. Sorry, boss, if you're finding out about this now. Okay, and then the other story. I was working with a manager, and we were just making sandwiches like usual. And I noticed that when we toasted a sandwich, it would burn the paper a little on the edges. That probably shouldn't be happening. So then a customer asks for just bacon toasted. And the boss lady puts some bacon on paper, and then puts it in the toaster. And we don't have a setting for just bacon. So then when she opens the toaster, there was a fire on the bacon. So then she starts to whack it with the little metal tray thing, but all she ended up doing was fanning the flames, making the fire bigger. You got this, right? Then I went in the back and I got the fire extinguisher and I actually used it. I single-handedly saved that Subway. Wait, what have I done? Is it okay if the bacon's a little crispy and has nitrogen and carbon dioxide stuff on it?
I don't go outside that much. Ergo, I don't see people that much. Ergo, I don't get recognized in public that much. Now you might think, James, really? You get recognized? But you're just some college dropout sitting in the closet right now making cartoons on the internet. People recognize you and talk to you and ask for your autograph? Yeah, I thought the same thing. I don't even show my face that much in my videos, so I don't know how people remembered what I looked like. When I first started drawing comics 4 years ago, I was never expecting that later people would be coming up to me and nervously asking me to write my name down on a piece of paper. Now, can I just talk about this? I don't have a signature, and if I'm going to be signing things, I really should start thinking about getting one. I signed 6,000 cards, and on all of them, I just wrote James and put a little smiley face. I probably wrote my name out more times that week than I did my entire life. Also, another thing, I have terrible handwriting. You'd think since I'm good at drawing cartoon characters, I should be good at drawing letters of the alphabet. Whenever I sign something, I always have to warn my fans, I'm really sorry, I have bad handwriting. And they always say the same thing, it's fine. No, it's not fine. I'm about to ruin whatever this pen touches. I don't get recognized nearly as many times as you might think. Like, I can go to the grocery store and not get recognized at all. Although, I am noticing that I get weird looks from kids now. I don't know if that's because of YouTube, though. But if you do see me out in the wild, then by all means, come up to me and say hi. Even if you're not sure it's me, still come up and ask. Even if I'm on my phone, just slap it out of my hand and I'll say, dude, what the heck? And then you say, the odd one's out, and I'll say, Maybe. I'm a pretty chill guy, okay? The only time I can think of it not being okay to come up and talk to me is if I'm asleep. Don't wake me up, guys. One time I was at the dollar store, not a proud moment in my life, and later I went home and someone on Twitter asked, "Hey, were you just at the dollar store at this address?" And I said, "Maybe." Another time I was at Chipotle, and I know in a previous video I said, "Hashtag boycott Chipotle because they didn't hire James like 3 years ago." But I'm a weak man. I might have to call off the boycott. So anyway, I'm standing in line to get a burrito, and I see a girl sitting down in the chairs looking at her phone, and she sort of looked like a girl that I went to high school with. Is that Rachel? I didn't say anything though. I got my food, and as I was about to leave, I glanced back at the girl, and she was looking at me. We both had that look in our eye like, yeah, we know each other. So I went over to her and I said, "Hi Rachel, are you James from The Odd Ones Out?" "You didn't go to high school with her. Okay, well I'm gonna go now. Good luck on your own." Yeah, I am. "What's your name? Maria?" "My name's James." "You already knew that. If you're watching, Maria, when I saw you, I thought we went to high school together. You look like someone who was on my improv team." So I recently went to PAX South with my friend Eugene. That's not his real name. I asked him if he was okay with me saying his real name in this video. He said he was fine with it, but I think calling him Eugene would be funnier. If you don't know what PAX is, it's basically Comic-Con, but only for games. They have card games and board games, but it's mostly video games. I've known Eugene for about a year now, but I've only ever talked to him over the internet. One day he asked, "Hey, do you want to go to PAX South with me? It's in my hometown." And I said, "Sure, because I think that's what friends do." I'm going to leave out a lot of details about what I did at PAX because I think that can be a video all by itself, but just traveling there, I was recognized. I got on the airplane to go to Texas, and this girl and her mom sat next to me, and I noticed that the girl's iPad wallpaper is Markiplier and Jacksepticeye. Part of me wanted to say, "Oh, so you watch YouTube videos? Do you know me?" But that's a tacky thing to say. I thought if she knew me, she'll say something. Don't start off conversations like that. We went the whole flight without saying anything to each other, and then when we landed, Mom said to me, "Hey, my daughter thinks you make YouTube videos." Maybe. On Friday, Eugene had to go to classes before PAX, so I went with him just so I could go straight to the convention. One of his classes was in a computer lab. I sat down next to Eugene's friend, and the computer was already logged on, so I was worried that I might be stealing someone else's spot. Then some other guy walks into class, and he looks at me and goes, "Whoa." And I said, "Oh, is this your spot? You're the odd ones out." Maybe. I didn't know him, but he knew me. Which is weird to think about. Of all the places you'd expect to meet a YouTuber, your computer lab wouldn't be one of them. I started messing around on Microsoft Paint. I wasn't paying attention to the teacher. I drew a landscape with a horse. It was beautiful. And then I drew my cartoon character with a mouse. Also, side note, this is why you don't draw with a mouse, kids. And Eugene's friend saw it and said, "Hey, that looks like a YouTuber my brother watches." And I said, "Huh. Weird." And then I went to PAX, I got recognized a lot there. I almost got kicked out because of all the people who recognized me were causing a fire hazard. After PAX was over, I went to the airport to go home. I got recognized by another kid who didn't even go to PAX, and also apparently another person recognized me and took this stalkerish photo and tweeted it to me. You could have said, "Hey, I was just playing on my DS. I wasn't doing anything important." And then while I was making this video, I got recognized again at Target. Not including VidCon, PAX, and the junior high that I tutor at sometimes, those were all the times that I got recognized. That I remember. At PAX, there is this boy who came up to me and said, "You at the bed until you are 8 years old." He was bringing up a joke in the peeing video where I said if we ever meet each other in real life, you're not allowed to bring it up. But the kid was saying it obviously as a joke. I knew he was messing around with me, so I laughed and I pushed him away like, "Eh, get out of here, you knucklehead." But then later I was thinking, I probably pushed that kid a little too hard. I hope I didn't make a bad first impression. So, if I pushed you at PAX, I was doing it in a loving manner. In conclusion, if you see me out in public, don't be afraid to come up to me and say, "Hey James, you left your house. Good job." I'm a pretty normal person. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that you, yes, you watching this right now, are an introvert. How do I know this? Because you're watching YouTube videos instead of being outside.
What are you doing on the computer? Go outside, so beautiful!
Don't worry, I'm an introvert too. I got an email from an 8-year-old once. He said he liked my videos. It was one of the worst emails I ever got. So I'm just gonna briefly explain what introvert means to all the 8-year-olds watching this. Hey kids, are you ready to learn? An introvert is a person who doesn't really like to play with other kids. This doesn't make them sad that they're lonely. They just would rather play by themselves. Think of it this way. Has your friend ever asked you to play with them, but you didn't really want to, so you asked your mom to make up a reason for you not to go? If so, then you're probably an introvert. Or you just need better friends. Me and my mom had a code word, so if a friend was on the phone who wanted to hang out, I would say, "Let me ask my mom." And when I asked her, if I said the code word, it meant, "Mom, make up an excuse so I can't go." I'm not going to say the code word because I still plan on using it. I actually made a comic kind of similar to this back in 2014, and it's one of my most popular comics, so thanks for liking it. Obviously, it would be one of my most popular comics. I mean, look how great it is. Michael, the creator of Vsauce, hey Vsauce, Michael here, has this new YouTube Red show called Minefield. And as of right now, it's the best YouTube Red series. And in the first episode, Michael goes into an isolation room for 3 days. He has no technology, he's all by himself for 3 days. When I first saw this, I thought, hey, maybe I should try that. Yeah, 3 days of nothing but your own thoughts. I can think of comic ideas, I can write a book, and I don't even have to write any of these ideas down because everything I say is being recorded. This could be my next vacation. Also, speaking of YouTube Red, hey Susan, I heard you had a new spot open for a Red series. I have this great idea called YouTuber Swap. It's like Wife Swap, but with YouTubers. Just hit me up if you're interested. Now, don't get the wrong idea that I'm someone who hates people. I don't. It's just, if we're strangers, then I'd rather not talk to you. Unless you're a stranger who's a fan of my videos. Okay, we can talk about me all day. Bringing up a point from the last video, don't be afraid to talk to me. You know, every YouTuber is in a weird position with their fans, because if you meet me, you already have a pretty good idea of who I am as a person. For instance, you know how long I wet the bed, but for me, I have no clue how long you wet the bed. So, what are we talking about? I'm okay with having a conversation with people, okay? It's just that I'm never the one who starts the conversation. But again, this doesn't apply to fans. I like to think that I'm decent with conversation, but I don't really know how good I am at it. I did fail public speaking. But on occasion, there are times when it's awkward not to talk to a stranger. One time in my college years, I got on an elevator to go to a class and another person got on with me. I live a pretty crazy life, I know. And I did what anyone should do in that situation. I didn't say anything to the other person. But then when we got on our floor, you know how the elevator doors are supposed to open? Well, this time, it didn't. The doors didn't open. This is an introvert's worst nightmare, by the way. And it wasn't one of those elevators that you could fit a king-size bed into. This elevator was about the size of a red box. Is the door gonna open? It seems like it should open by now. What do you do in that situation? You can't not talk to the person you're now trapped with. So, what class are you going to? Physics? Oh, that makes sense, because this is a science building. Enough time had passed where we started looking up the school's number to tell them that we were stuck, which is what you're supposed to do, right? There's not like a button on the elevator that you can press to call for help, right? But luckily, while we were doing that, for whatever reason, after a solid 2 minutes, the door decided to open. And just the wave of relief that went over me and this kid. Oh, I thought we'd be in there for hours!
I hope I never see you again.
Same. And that's why I'm never going in an elevator again. It's too risky. I think the problem I have is that I'm bad at starting conversations. Normally, if I'm talking to someone who I don't know, I'll ask, "So, how was your day?" But if your day was anything but good, I don't want to hear it. My dog died. Yeah, they do that. Why is starting a conversation so hard? I only know like 3 good conversation starters. The first one is, "How was your day?" And if that doesn't work, I start talking about all this crazy weather we're having. And in Arizona, there's really only one weather. Hot. Although it did rain like 2 weeks ago. And lastly, if I have nothing else to ask, I hit them with a really hard question. What color is your toothbrush? Mine's red. To start a conversation, sometimes people will ask, "What's your favorite blank?" I have nothing against these types of questions. I think it tells you a lot about the person you're talking to, but there's one form of this question that I really hate. And it's the question, "What's your favorite candy bar?" And I hate this question because my favorite candy bar, and I will stick by my answer no matter what you think, is M&M's. That's not a candy bar. Ow! What an astute observation! I'm a very simple man, alright? I like my chocolate pure. Sometimes when people ask this, I think, I should just say Twix. People won't get mad if I say Twix. But then I remember, screw Twix, I like M&M's. But James, why don't you just say Hershey's bar? Because Hershey's makes a mess on your hands, and they don't come in a convenient bite-sized pieces, while M&M's hard outer shell improves their overall texture. Why am I even having this argument? I had a friend tell me, "Well, James, I really like Smarties, but I know they're not a bar, so I don't say they're my favorite candy bar." First of all, dude,
Smarties? Really? That's your favorite candy? And second of all, the person asking the question honestly doesn't care what my answer is. Why are you asking such a specific question? You're excluding so much other candy. Candy bars are exclusively chocolate. What if my favorite candy isn't chocolate? What if it's Smarties? Whoa, did you guys see what I just did there? I was talking about M&Ms for like a whole minute. I was having a conversation. All because I was arguing why M&Ms are my favorite candy bar. So that's it. That's how you talk to people. You disagree with everything they say and then argue about it. So everyone watching, argue about your favorite candy bar down in the comments. You know, I've realized something. If I keep making videos about my life stories, then soon I'll run out of life to talk about. Which is why sometimes I'll agree to do a thing just so I can make a video about it later. Perks of being a YouTuber. So my mom is friends with this junior high school teacher. Kudos to any junior high school teachers watching. It amazes me that anyone would be okay sitting in a room with 27th graders and not even getting paid that much to do it. My mom was talking to her like moms do, and I guess I came up in conversation. And my mom told her that I wanted to be a math teacher, but then I became a YouTuber instead. So my mom's friend, I'll just make up a fake name for her, I'll just call her Mom's Friend. Mom's Friend comes up to me and says, "Hey, would you be interested in helping tutor some 7th and 8th graders?" Ew. I think the only reason she chose me was because, one, I'm good at math, duh, and two, I'd be good with kids or something. I told her I'd do it because 7th and 8th graders are the worst kinds of people. Unless you watch my videos, then you're cool. I'll finally get to live my half-hearted dream of teaching kids math. Now, I didn't make this video to talk about math, okay? That's boring. Before I even started tutoring these kids, Mom's Friend asked if I wanted to chaperone on a field trip so I can get to know them. Okay, 7th and 8th graders are between the ages 11 and 13, aka the worst time to be alive as a human. You're going through puberty, you're super self-conscious, no one wants to be your friend. 7th grade is just one big popularity contest, and everyone's losing. No one looks back at themselves when they're in 7th grade and thinks, "Yeah, I was all right." There's definitely some Sevies watching right now thinking, "Oh, I'm not that bad." Doesn't matter who you are, you're gonna look back on these years and hate yourself. I remember when I was in the 7th grade, I noticed all the cool kids wore really low socks. The shorter the sock, the cooler you were. So I always wore the lowest sock possible. Most of the time, you couldn't even see the socks. It looked like I was wearing nothing. That's how cool I was. Sometimes I put on girl socks because they were the lowest socks I could find. I was so cool. Anyway, I was going to be chaperoning these kids on a field trip. They were going to the big college here in Arizona. Can I just say ASU? And this was supposed to get them excited to learn and pursue a higher education. Kinda awkward bringing me along, the successful college dropout. "Hey kids, you should go to college. It's important." I don't count though. And I didn't know what to expect on this field trip. YouTube says my biggest demographic is 18 to 24 year olds, but I don't think that's true. Because it's usually kids leaving comments and emailing me asking to collab. Either they're the loud minority, or there's a bunch of kids lying about their age on YouTube. I walk into the classroom, and everyone's head turns. "Is that the Odd Ones Out? Oh my goodness, that's the Odd Ones Out!" Kids started forming lines, they were taking pictures, they were hugging me, and I'm just kidding, that didn't happen. No one cared, they were all still talking in their cliques. With all the kids I've talked to over the internet, that sounded wrong. With all the kids I've talked to, I was hoping that one, at least one kid had seen my stuff. But nope. So I just sat in silence and played on my phone. We get on the bus. I don't remember where I said this, but on school buses, all the cool kids sit in the back. Well, this time the opposite was true, because I sat in the front. We arrive at the college, I go to this group of kiddos and I say, "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" And at that moment, I realized I sounded exactly like one of those adults who try to talk to kids but have no idea what to say. I was planning on them saying, "Astronaut," or "Doctor," and then I was gonna say, "Well, you could learn that in college!" That's what I was going to say. "So what do you want to be when you grow up?" They said nothing. They didn't say anything. They just looked at me like, "Why is this old guy trying to talk to us?" So then I just walked away. Alright, I need a new question. I wanted to somehow bring up, "Hey, I have over 1 million subs on YouTube." But that's tacky, you don't just start conversations like that. Sub counts have to come out naturally. So I went up to a new group of kids and I said, "So, do you guys watch any YouTube videos?" And most of the kids did the same thing, looking at me like I was weird. But one kid said, "Rice Gum." Ugh, ew. Here's actually the story of how I met Rice Gum. So I was at VidCon, and all of a sudden, a huge crowd of people just goes running by. And I said, "Who's that?" And someone else said, "Rice Gum." And then I said, "Oh, who's that?" And I didn't really meet him. My friend Gabe did, though. So we were given a tour of this college, and it was actually kind of interesting because it was the college that I would have attended if I wasn't trying to save money. It was fun seeing what could have been. There were other junior highs doing tours at the same time, so we crossed paths with this preparatory school. I'm guessing it was a preparatory school because they were wearing uniforms. And this one kid in the other group just pointed to me saying, "The odd one's out! The odd one's out!" over and over, and I just said, "Hey," back to him. And that was it. We just kept walking. No pictures or high fives. Man, why couldn't have that kid been in my group? Preparatory kids are so much cooler. So we do the tour, and I was in the back not talking to anyone. We ate lunch, and there was actually a kid in my group who did know me. His name was Connor. I think he was too shy to talk to me at first. Thanks, Connor. Where were you when I asked your peers what they wanted to be when they grew up? But he was cool. We ate lunch together. The field trip was almost over, and I kept thinking, man, I did not connect with these kids, like, at all. Well, they are only 7th and 8th graders, so it's not like I need their approval. Hey kids, I have 1.8 million subs on YouTube! It was tacky to use my sub count to get validated by these children, but after I said that, everyone loved me. I think I made a good connection with them. And okay, all the kids I tutored that were failing math, 90% of the time, they weren't failing because they didn't understand the material. They were failing because they were missing assignments. So alright, I'm about to tutor everyone watching this video. And this goes for you college folks too. Kids? Turn in your work. Even if it's late, it's better than a zero. Alright, lesson's over. We're not gonna do an end card for this video
because I wanted to show you guys something. Here are all the cards I made for the plushies. Good news if you live in the States because they will most likely arrive before Christmas. Sorry if you live somewhere else. Also, if you ordered a custom signature, you're just gonna get one of these boys. We want to get them out before Christmas, but then we're going to send the special ones later, so you'll get two cards if you ordered special instructions.
Bobby, what do you have to say?
Also, another important announcement is I'm going to be taking a Christmas break. I have been working nonstop on videos since VidCon, so I am in desperate need of a break. I'm still going to be posting comics and maybe some other non-animated video if I can, but this is the only animated video this month, so I guess Merry Christmas. Can I say Merry Christmas? Whatever holiday you celebrate, just wear your seatbelt.
Look at that. This is my...
I haven't hung it up or anything. It's just on the floor.
So I feel a bit obligated to talk about France. It was really fun, really. Okay, one thing though. Every meal is like super important in France. Except for breakfast for some reason. For lunch and dinner, everyone sat down together as a family and talked. But for breakfast, they were just like, "Here's a croissant! Okay, let's go." I mean, breakfast is only the most important meal of their day. And I was going to make a joke about how they have an entire aisle of cheese in the grocery store, but I realized back home we have an entire aisle for candy and ice cream. So whatever. We went to the Louvre, which was like so amazing. They had really cool art by famous people. They had the famous statue with no arms. They had these really fancy rooms because apparently people used to live here. And probably the most famous painting in the world, the Mona Lisa. That room was super crowded. And right behind the Mona Lisa, there was this super tall painting that probably took 20 years to make. The picture frame was as wide as my body. But were people crowded around this one taking pictures? No. I don't even know what this one's called. The American school system has failed me yet again. And as someone who likes to draw, I thought it was really cool to look at the amazing color and details. Also, I took a bunch of pictures of butts. Look, this is the really famous no arm one. Look at her butt. So I had a good time, but afterwards we went to the Picasso Museum, Modern Art Museum, and this other one. I forgot its name. It was French. And it's kinda weird going into these places as someone who likes to draw cartoons. Oh, I like the colors, they're pretty neat, and oh, putting the face on the side of the head, that's an interesting design. But I kinda have to draw the line somewhere, Picasso. I mean, just look at this! Why is it framed? Someone framed this. And Picasso was a good artist. Shoot, he's better than me. So why did they throw this stuff to hang up? Would you call this his best work? It's not just Picasso. Look at the modern art museums. My favorite piece was the painting of a black ring. In fact, I loved it so much that I drew over it in my phone and probably spent more time in thought than the actual artist. I'm not saying the more real a painting looks, the more artsy it is.
Wait, yes I am. I mean, look at my drawings. No, seriously, look at them. Their heads are super round and they're so white they can't dance. If I entered an art contest against Leonardo da Vinci, he would win! Because his stuff took talent. It's not easy to draw something that looks exactly like it does in real life. But cartoons? They're easy. They're so easy. And I know I'm leaving out paintings with color schemes and forms. Now after seeing this, I've come up with something called the Keith Haring Principle to help people like me better understand modern art. In the late 70s, a man named Keith Haring drew graffiti in subway stations and had sort of a unique design. Whenever he started to draw graffiti, he never thought about what the finished product was going to be. He just drew whatever he felt like. He ended up making thousands of them, and people started to notice his unique characters. Soon he got more and more famous and popular. Now he's at the point where you can buy t-shirts and mugs of his drawings, and I think that's really cool. They're interesting designs, and I would wear them. Do they belong in a museum? No. Keith made thousands of these small, simple drawings. They're still art, but not art people should pay to see. They should pay to wear and drink out of it. And by the way, this stuff is in no way research, so I'm talking completely out of my butt right now, but I think Picasso and the circle painting should be on t-shirts, or kids' books, or even webcomics. So people would say, hey, I like your shirt. Thanks, I like the design, and would never frame it and hang it up on my wall.
And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92.
I'm 93. Do I still count?
No, Grandpa, we hate you.
Just so you know, that gag was based off a comic I made back in 2014. So I wanted to make a Christmas video, but I didn't know what to talk about. So we're just gonna sit here and roast marshmallows by this PNG of a fire. Do you guys know about that soccer game that happened in the middle of World War I on Christmas Day? And it was between two opposing sides, the Allies and the Central Powers? I'm not making this up. So German and British troops were in the trenches, you know, fighting for their lives. They were in the middle of a war after all. And on Christmas Eve, German troops started singing Christmas carols. Then the British troops responded singing their own Christmas carols. Then one thing led to another, and on Christmas Day, they started playing soccer. Well, the British troops would have called it football, and the German troops would have called it football. But I'm calling it soccer. Yeah, I know I'm a heretic. I don't think anything like that has happened in a war ever. Except for that one time in the Revolutionary War when everyone stopped fighting because the new Super Smash Brothers just came out. Merry feet! Merry feet! Tis not Falco! Wamba with combination!
Oh!
Where art thou? Okay, that was obviously a joke. Melee didn't come out for at least, like, another year. Stupid. Anyway, what I'm wondering is, do you think anyone during that game felt a little bit awkward? So, how's the war? Oh, you're fearing for your life? Well, that's good. That's good. That means we're doing a good job. Do you think whoever won the game of soccer bragged to the other team?
Ha ha! Yes! First we beat you at football, next, the world.
Ah, dang it, my marshmallow burned. Does the story of Rudolph count as a fable? What would the moral of Rudolph be? I think it would be, being different from society will be punished unless it's exploitable. Okay, I stole that quote from something I saw on the subreddit, I'm 14 and this is deep. How come no one sings any songs about any of the other reindeer? Rudolph saved Christmas once, and like, he didn't do it alone. Just because he could see through the snow, which, by the way, wouldn't have been useful in Arizona, didn't mean he carried Santa's sleigh all by himself. But no, just because you were bullied as a kid, you get your own song. Well, enough about you going down in history, Rudolph. I'm gonna make my own song about Prancer. Do, do, do. Prancer, the normal nose reindeer, had a very normal nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say, yep, that's a nose. All of the other reindeer respected him for meeting the expectations of what a normal reindeer should be like. They always let little Prancer play on his reindeer bike. Okay, I'll stop. What if the reason Rudolph had a shiny nose was because Rudolph's mom had an affair with a clown? That was based off a comic I made in 2014. Why did the three wise men bring baby Jesus gold, Frankenstein, and myrrh? What kind of baby would want that? Okay, that was also based off a comic I made in 2014. Man, 2014 was just my year. Please read my comics. You know what? I'm not done talking about Rudolph. You guys have all seen the stop-motion movie they made about him in the 60s, right? You know, about the elf who wants to be a dentist. So who wouldn't?
Why weren't you an elf practice?
Well, there's one scene in the movie where Yukon Cornelius sacrifices himself to kill the abominable snowman, and he saves all of his friends, and also indirectly saves Christmas, but whatever, he doesn't get a song. But then later in the movie, he just walks through the front door, and everyone's wondering how he survived, and Rudolph even says,
But you went over the side of a cliff!
And then Yukon tells everyone the answer,
Didn't I ever tell you about bumbos?
Bumbos bounce!
And then everyone just laughs it off like it was a hilarious joke and doesn't ask him any more questions. Even as a kid, I thought that was a stupid explanation. What does that mean, bumbos bounce? Like, did you two fall off the cliff, and then when you hit the bottom, just trampoline yourself all the way back up? Oh wait, no, I think I know what it means. It means the writers didn't want to kill off a character, so they just came up with a plot device to make him live. You know, because you can't have death in a kid's movie! No one dies! Not even the bad guy dies. How does Santa deliver to houses without chimneys? I think Tim Allen tried to explain it once. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this video. I kept it short so that way I have more time to spend Christmas with my family, and it also gives me more time to wrap presents. Because, you know, I'm just terrible at rapping. And publish. A 23-minute long movie review about an 80s puppet movie sure is different than the content I usually post. And even though it was a lot of work, it was fun to try something new, and I think the video turned out pretty good. Am I right, Chamberlain Funko Pop? Mmm. Well, it's a good thing I'll never, ever have to worry about this franchise ever again. Are you sure about that? When I made a review about a cult classic puppet movie that came out 35 years ago, the last thing I was expecting was that said franchise would get a reboot announced 2 weeks after I posted. And every single day since then, people have been tweeting at me saying, "Hey James, did you know Netflix is making a Dark Crystal series?" Yes, I know. Do you know who you're talking to? If you don't know what the heck I'm talking about, then I recommend you watch my video, The Movie That Was Too Scary for Baby James. In that video, I reviewed a scary kids movie called The Dark Crystal. The movie was more or less a passion project of Jim Henson, the creator of The Muppets, and so this movie was done entirely with puppets. It came out before I was born, but I still somehow watched it and got scarred for life. In my review, I said some good things about the movie, like I thought it was a very creative and artistic film, but I, also said some negative things about it, too. As YouTubers, sometimes we forget that our videos are public and can be viewed by anyone. And when we talk about companies, we can forget that real people are attached to those properties who have poured hundreds of hours into these projects, and there's a chance they'll see our videos. And unbeknownst to me, Lisa Henson, current CEO of the Henson Company, saw my video. And for some reason, I never considered that was ever going to happen. If I had known that Lisa frickin' Henson was gonna watch my video, I probably would have worded a few things differently. I don't think she was too mad at my video, though, because she invited me to tour the Henson office, and I got to see a real-life Skeksis puppet, which resurfaced an unhealthy amount of repressed memories, and I got to meet some of the puppeteers, which was a whole lot of fun. Also, before Age of Resistance was released, I got contacted by Netflix, and they invited me and some other Dark Crystal fans to an early screening of the first two episodes, and I signed a non-disclosure agreement so I couldn't spoil anything. I don't remember when that NDA said I was allowed to talk about it again, but hopefully I'm in the clear. When I was in the early screening, I just remember thinking about how cool that these characters in this world were back on the big screen. Netflix has a pretty big screen. And the puppetry and cinematography have only gotten better. And the fact that 95% of everything was done with practical effects and puppets, it's beautiful! There's not a single human in this series, except in episode 10 when this puppeteer's head can be seen for a couple frames. I just checked and they actually took it out, so I still saw it. So much time and care and hard work was put into this series that there was a documentary made about how hard it was to make this series. If any of you are wondering, no, Reunip does not make an appearance in Age of Resistance, nor is there a naked baby Jen puppet. Also, if you're worried that the show wasn't going to be as dark and scary as the original, don't worry. It's darker and scarier than the original. The Netflix family Twitter account was nice enough to timestamp every scary part in the series, and as you can see, stuff goes down in episode 10. Surprisingly, though, they didn't blacklist the scene of the Skeksis peeing out of three different pee streams in episode 6 at 28 minutes and 41 seconds. Really makes you think. So, artistically, this series is beautiful, and it needs to do well because it's left open for a season 2, and I want a season 2 to get greenlit. I'm not going to do a plot summary of the whole thing like I did in the first review because I don't want this video to be an hour long, and you should watch it for yourself. I'm not just going to do everything for you, I'm not your mom. But there are some things you should know before you go watching the series. This is kinda spoilery, but I won't spoil that much. So this alien planet is home to these creatures called Gelflings. They can share memories with each other by holding hands, and the girl Gelflings have wings. There's also this other creature called Agura, who's been around since the beginning of the world. She's basically Yoda's sassy grandma. And then out of nowhere, these tree aliens visit. Stay with me here. And they crack this very important crystal, and in doing so, they split into two different creatures. Their goodness becomes this thing called a mystic, who are dumb, and their bad side become these cool bird monsters called Skeksis, and then the Skeksis took over the entire world, so whoops. None of this is explained in the original movie, and it's not explained in the series until episode 7, but I think that the tree alien backstory should have started the series, which is why I just spoiled it for you. The original 90-minute film already had so much lore, and this new Netflix reboot just added even more lore? There's even a character named Lore? How much lore is there? Speaking of names, there are a lot of made-up words in this series, and sometimes those made-up words are hard to remember. Within the first minute of Age of Resistance, the narrator tells us that there are seven clans of Gelflings, but then only names three, because there are only three important ones that we should care about. I don't even know the names of the other four clans, and I'm like a Dark Crystal aficionado. Also, there are like 10 evil bird monsters, all with names like Skekso, Skeksil, Skektek, and Shrek. Granted, most of the time they go by their more common names like Chamberlain or the Emperor, but gosh dang it, I can't even remember some of those names. That's the pussy one, and that's the one that made that weird face in the original movie, and that's the one whose voice does not sound like a Skeksis at all.
Now, what vexes you, child?
Another thing you should know is that I thought this series was pretty slow. Maybe it's because I'm impatient, or I'm used to watching YouTube videos at 2x speeds exclusively, but do you remember in the original movie how there was a scene where the Skeksis ate dinner for 2 whole minutes, and visually it was amazing, but the whole time you're thinking, yeah, I get it. Well, there are a lot of scenes like that in the series. Let's take the beginning of episode 2, for example. It starts with a character we've never seen before waking up and putting on his shoes and making porridge and then spilling the porridge on his shirt and brushing his hair, then roughing it up, then grabbing his cleaning supplies. And it's just a whole minute of this unnamed character getting ready for his day. It's just so poor. Just cut it, please! And it wouldn't be that bad if this was the only example, but trust me, there are plenty of examples. I just don't want to spoil any of them for you. Turning a 90-minute movie into a 9-hour TV series, you're going to have some filler or some scenes that don't necessarily drive the plot forward. I get that. Luckily, I found this Chrome plugin that lets you watch Netflix at 2x speed, so
it's all good.
Making this video has got me thinking about prequels and how tricky they are to do right. In the original movie, there are only 2 Gelflings left in the entire world, so a prequel that sets up a world with 7 different Gelfling clans, we as an audience know that something's gonna happen, and it ain't gonna look good for the Gelfling. The series also added this MacGuffin Halo sword-looking thing that was supposed to save the world, but the whole time watching that, I kept thinking, no, that's not how the world is saved. The world's not saved until 1982. Also, there are certain characters that we know can't die because they're in the original movie, but boy does this show make you think some OG characters are gonna die. It almost makes me wish that the writers used the 80s Dark Crystal movie as inspiration and rebooted the series in its own separate universe. Movie reviewers tend to focus a lot on the negatives, and I don't want to come off as a hater because I really did enjoy this series, and I want a season 2 to get made, so let's end this video with some of the things I liked about this series. I like that we got to see the Skeksis with more personality because they were always so over-the-top evil. The Hunter Skeksis was just on a whole new level of cool. All the other Skeksis never came across as threatening. Like look how slow they walk. I could beat them up. But the Hunter Skeksis, oh man, he was awesome. Do you think he'll be my friend? I like that the series didn't tone down the darkness, and if anything, they amplified it, because everyone like me should have a deep-seated fear of puppets. There are some great nods to the original Dark Crystal, like when the Emperor Skeksis says,
I will never be dust!
Ah! But we all know that's the very first thing he does in the original movie. Celadon is a piece of garbage and does not deserve a redemption arc. The voice acting is amazing. There are a lot of talented people voicing these characters, like Luke Skywalker. A YouTuber named Barnaby Dixon, who made these very cool mantis finger puppets, got to work on a scene where the puppets put on a mini puppet show. And that was everything I liked about Dark Crystal: Age of Resistance. So, in conclusion, if you have 9 hours of free time, download the Video Speed Controller plugin, set that bad boy to 2, and save yourself 4.5 hours. But do watch Age of Resistance. Also, executives, if you still need someone to play Rayunip... Hello. Hey. This video is going to be a little more educational than usual. Okay, so there's this channel that I used to really like watching called VArt. And I say used to because she doesn't really post that often anymore. She makes videos that combine two of my favorite subjects, math and art.
You like math?
Yes, okay, I like math. So VArt, I don't know her real name, made videos about math and triangles and transgenderism, and I'm going to be honest, I've kind of forgotten everything she's talked about. Hexa something, that was one of her things. But every year she's made anti-pi videos. Pi as in the math pi, remember? We're talking about math, not the... Okay, so she posts them every year on Pi Day, which is today. It's Pi Day, if you didn't know that. Let me just tell you something interesting about pi. In 1949, we started using computers to find pi, and we kept getting closer and closer as technology advanced, and we never found the true value of pi, to this day. All those pi to a million places websites? Nope, not pi. Yeah, we've gotten really, really close to pi, and yet, we're nowhere near as close. 'Cause it's infinite. But I mean, it's close enough where you physically can't measure that accurate in the real world. But it's not the true value of pi. The true value of pi goes on forever. And we haven't really gotten to the end of that. Okay, so back to VArt. There's a high chance she made a 2016 anti-pi video today, right now. So go check it out. Link in the description, if she's made one. So I guess this is a rebuttal video? About why pi is actually awesome? Oh, and I'm gonna be rebuking her 2014 video because the 2015 one was kinda stupid.
Ah, March 14th, that's just an arbitrary number on a calendar we created, yeah!
Man, shut up. And I actually wanted to make this video back in 2015, but I didn't. Instead, I just made this comic, because last year was hashtag Ultimate Pi Day. So I've actually waited a year now, so I'm excited to talk about it. Let's do it! I hope I'm not breaking any copyright laws by...
This Pi Day, I'm mad about how people worship pi for being infinite, for going on forever. First of all, pi is not infinite.
Well, yeah, it is. But that's not why it's awesome. Every number is technically infinite. You take the number 4 and you add a .0. The 4 is still the same, but in theory, you can add a 0 forever, making it technically infinite. And that's just what pi is. It's just a number. It's not infinity. No one's saying that it is.
I know, it's not about its magnitude. It's about all those digits, infinite digits, going on forever. But first of all, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, no, it doesn't. That doesn't make it not awesome. It's right there on the number line between 3 and 4. It's just a number, like I said. Y equals pi is just a straight horizontal line. You take the derivative of pi, you get 0. It's a number. It's just a number, man. Just a number.
Pi is a number, not a process.
Yeah, okay, we agree. But that doesn't make it not awesome. The speed of light is just a number. It's about what that super specific number represents.
Secondly, yeah, so it's got infinite digits. So what? 1/3 has infinite digits.
Yeah, but pi is random numbers that go on forever. And there's no pattern. That's what's so cool. Do you know what the trillionth digit of pi is? No, you don't. It's random digits with no pattern. But I know the trillionth digit of 1/3. Spoiler alert, it's 3.
There's exactly as many digits in 1/3 as in pi, as in 99.999 repeating.
Yeah, the digits of pi are random, but the number as a whole isn't random at all, which is another cool thing. It is the ratio of the diameter of a circle to its circumference. Multiply the diameter by pi, you get the circumference. Are you forgetting that?
There's an infinite number of rational numbers. For any two fractions, you can find another fraction that's between them again and again and again. There's never any fractions that are right next to each other on the number line.
Yes, irrational numbers are technically everywhere. Take the 1 millionth digit of pi, change it to a 3, and you get an entirely new irrational number. It's not pi anymore. I mean, this was never pi to begin with, but you can't use this to get the circumference anymore. Nuh-uh, not good. But it's this highly specific irrational number that this special ratio occurs. Not this one, not this one, This one. It's why we made this specific irrational number its own symbol. Well, okay, we actually used a Greek letter, so it's not totally made up.
So I don't know why anyone would make a fuss about the grand infinities and forevers of a boring little number like pi.
It's not boring.
The only thing even a little weird about pi is that you do get an irrational number by taking such a simple ratio of such a simple geometric object.
Yes, thank you. It's so weird, right?
Surely that never happens with other simple ratios of other simple geometric objects. Oh, wait, they're in everything.
What? No, okay. If you take one of the sides of a square and multiply it by this number, you get the length of its diagonal between the corners. Okay, so this is the ratio of the side of a square and its diagonal. And it's just random numbers that go on forever. Kinda like pi. So why don't we celebrate this number? Why don't we have a special symbol for it like pi? Well, actually we do. It's called radical 2. Look, you just take this number, you square it, you get 2. Just plain old boring 2. That's not special. You can't square pi and get something like 10. You square pi, it's still irrational. Look at this triangle. Same deal, right? This number goes on forever. But wait, it can be written down as radical 3 over 2, just like what you did in the video. Now this one for a pentagon, we do use a symbol for it. It's a Greek symbol called phi. Phi? Phi? That's really close to pi. I wonder if that's on purpose. Now, phi is approximately this number. Kinda like pi, right? Totally, 100%ly irrational. I think we got ourselves another pi, but wait! We can rewrite it like this! Hey, side note, this number is considered the golden ratio, and it has to do when we talk about that swirly, like, seashell thing. And it can actually be found in art, so that's pretty cool. Okay, back to pi. You can't rewrite pi like any of these numbers. Pi is its own number. It stands by itself above the rest. It's not radical 2, not rad 3 over 2, but just plain old 3.1415. That's why pi is so awesome. There's a picture going around on the internet that's like, pi contains the day you were born and the day you'll die. We give the numbers, the letters, every possible conversation you ever had, and every conversation you didn't have. You see, now that's just stupid. That's just the nature of having random numbers go on forever. I could do the same thing on randomgenerator.org if I just generated a random digit forever. Now what does this mean? Do circles even exist? How can you have a bendy line with just straight lines? What is real? Alright, so just to finish things up, this is all bullcrap. Well, not all of it. Well, yeah, all of it. The reason why pi is actually famous and so beloved is because, let's be real, guys. It's called pi. You don't see people celebrating Pi Day because they appreciate how this irrational number is the ratio between the diameter and its circumference. They're celebrating it because it's called pi. And I think that's what happened to pi. People were like, ah, this boring math term has a funny name. Let's celebrate it on our meaningless calendars.
So me and TJ had to sleep a whole night in the axe-smelling tent. Every breath I could taste the smell, and I just got more and more angry. The night finally passed, and I woke up early in the morning before everyone else, so I could start with my master revenge plan. Was I tired? Maybe. But that's a sacrifice you have to make for vengeance. Every campsite had a water fountain coming out of the ground, connected to a PVC pipe. I found the biggest Ziploc freezer bag I could find and started to fill it up with water. It was obviously a slow process. I had plenty of time to reconsider. To think about what TJ said or what would happen after I got my revenge. But nothing stopped me. I was a squeaky-voiced, hormone-induced monster. Once the bag was full, I went back to my tent and woke TJ up. He got up and I told him to watch this. TJ actually had no part in the revenge plan. I just wanted to suck him down with me. I think TJ actually didn't want to get revenge. I ran towards the mega log tent and hid behind a real tent that was right next to the log one. Everyone was still inside. TJ still had no clue what I was doing. Until I chucked the bag over the real tent. If everything went according to plan, the bag would break on the roof, and the water would sink through the openings, and then they'd be super wet, LOL. That was the plan.
I never saw the carnage my creation had done. I was worried that I'd completely miss the log tent. I never played any sports as a kid, so just making it over the first tent would have been an accomplishment. But the fact that everyone started screaming and one boy yelled, "Micah, I'm gonna kill you!" I knew it must have been the most perfect shot. Did I stay around and laugh at their stupid, guilty faces? No. Me and TJ ran away as fast as we possibly could, without looking back. We sprinted off into the woods before any 15-year-old saw us. We just kept running and running, making sure to get as far away from camp as possible. And on the way, I kinda threw up a little. TJ, being the good friend that he was, thought I was unfit to run, so he decided that we should hide in some bushes. After about 5 minutes, nobody came.
"Should we head back to camp?" "No." "Yeah, you're right."
So we kept running, until we found the lake where scouts could canoe in. Me and TJ both thought this was a good place to stop, so we sat by the lake and talked for a few hours. Because in a week, TJ and his family were going to move away to China for 2 years, and I knew I wouldn't see him again for a long time, so I wanted to spend every moment I had with him. We were just a couple of bros being real with each other, skipping rocks and talking about our feelings. And then that night, the 15-year-old's tent got axe-bombed, so I guess it wasn't them. Oh, and remember how I threw up after running so much? Well, apparently there was a sickness going around camp that all the camp instructors got, and about 50% of the scouts got it too. And lo and behold, one of the 15-year-olds wasn't feeling so well when he went to bed that night. And then the sudden jolt awake and the cold water made him throw up. Yay!
What's in the box? I said, what's in the box? I said, what's in the box?
I can make a great boat out of this.
So this one time, when I was in the third grade, for some reason our teacher thought it would be a good idea to get his entire class to participate in a cardboard boat race. Cardboard boat racing is this event where teams of people build their own boats out of cardboard and then race against other people's cardboard boats. Now, you might be thinking that cardboard really isn't the best material to make a boat out of. And you're right. But cardboard is cheap, you can get big pieces of it, and they float in the water for a little bit. Perfect for making boats out of. It's good, short-lived entertainment. It's yachts of fun! Apparently, a lot of other schools got their students to do cardboard boat racing. I thought it was just a strange thing my teacher made us do, but if other teachers did it, I guess he wasn't the only weirdo. I don't know what cardboard boat racing is supposed to teach you, maybe teamwork skills and shipbuilding? I mean, it would come in handy if I was stranded on an island with cardboard and duct tape and I could tell everyone, "Don't worry guys, I learned how to make boats out of these things in the third grade." But no one else in my school did cardboard boat racing. It was just my class. And I think part of the reason we did this was because the class I was in was an honors class, so we were better than everyone else.
Guys, I need to tell you about how friggin' smart I am.
So in the second grade, everyone took this test to see if you would get put into the honors class, which, I'm gonna be honest, I don't remember taking it. I just remember my mom sitting me and my twin sister down and telling us that we weren't gonna be in the same class anymore because I made it into the honors classes and my sister didn't. Haha, loser! The honors program was called DOGS, which stood for DANG! Original Gangsta Students! Okay, that's not actually the name, I made that up. If you got accepted into DOGS, you stayed in the DOGS program for the rest of elementary school. So I basically had the same kids in my class for 5 school years. And our class became known as the DOGS kids. I think since I was in the DOGS program, I wasn't bullied nearly as much as I should have been. Because everyone in my class was a huge nerd. Also, I never really learned how to interact with people socially because I already knew everyone in my class. So all the DOGS were cool with each other, but all the non-DOGS hated us. They thought that us DOGS thought that we were so much better than them. And we were. Now, call me old-fashioned, but I think the third grade is a little too soon to tell if you're smart or not. I would say that the DOGS program did not make me a smarter person. I don't speak for everyone, this was just my experience, but in high school, my twin sister was a way better student. High school didn't have the dogs program, so me and my sister were in the same classes again, and she was a straight A student while I was about a straight B and C student. So all the math I've learned is telling me that something's not adding up. It probably had nothing to do with being in the honors program in elementary school. I probably just procrastinated a lot in high school. Okay, now let's get back to the actual topic of the video. Leading up to the event, the teacher wanted us to stay after school to help make the boats, and I, being the loyal dog that I was, stayed after school exactly zero times. Sorry dudes, I take the bus home, and last time I missed the bus, my mom got mad at me and I cried, and she had to pick me up. So actually, if I was deserted on an island, I wouldn't be much help. I would have to get my mom to pick me up. This event was at a medium-sized man-made lake in Arizona, because we don't have real lakes, they're all man-made. And it was right next to a college, and a lot of college kids like to get drunk there. We ended up making two boats. One was white, and one was blue with a dragon head at the front and a tail in the back, and they both could hold 10 people. There wasn't enough room for everyone in the class to get a spot on the boat, and the kids who actually helped build it got a reserved seat. But since I was a scrawny white boy that didn't take up much space, I got to sit in the very front, because they were the coolest and smallest seats. The person who I sat next to was this girl named Priscilla. I still keep in contact with her, and I asked if I could say her name in this video, and she said yes. Later in life, she was the first girl to ever slap me. I didn't ask permission to tell that story. While we were waiting for our turn to race, my dad got me a snow cone, and that snow cone was the very first time I remember getting a brain freeze. It hurts to eat this. Yeah. They do that. When it was our turn, we rowed the boat out and we actually stayed afloat. I mean, it was only a couple inches away from sinking, but it worked. My mom told me beforehand that if the boat sunk, I should kick off my shoes because that would weigh me down and I would drown. Thanks for the vote of confidence, Mom! And I remember being so afraid of the boat sinking. Not because I could drown, but because I didn't want to lose my shoes. So there we were, a bunch of 8-year-olds in a glorified cardboard box, on a lake, with 3 other boxes filled with drunk college students. The course we had to take was pretty simple. It only had 2 left turns. Should have been a piece of cake. And we were doing pretty good until we had to make the first left turn. We messed up on that part. We practiced turning on land all the time. But for some reason, when we were in the water, our turning maneuver wasn't working. We kind of just drifted forward. We were pretty much all stranded. We didn't know how to drive this thing, and we were running out of time since the cardboard doesn't last that long when it's wet. But there were these lifeguard/helper people going around in canoes, and one person came up to our boat and he just kind of pushed it with his paddle and he turned the boat, and we were back in the race. Well, actually, by this point, everyone else had already completed the course. But we were still floating. We were still gonna finish this. When it came time for the second turn, the same thing happened. We didn't learn anything. They never taught us this in honors classes. By this point, the next 4 people racing just went. They got tired of waiting. And while the canoe boat guy was trying to teach us how to turn, the other boats just passed us. Eventually, we did get the turning thing down and we made it back to shore. The boat stayed up the entire time. Out of the 4 people we raced against, we came in 8th. I kinda wish something bad did happen. Like the boat flipped over or a shark ate one of the kids. That would have been a better YouTube video. But that also would have been lying. And then afterwards, the president came down and high-fived all of us. And to prove I'm not lying, here's some pictures of me in front of the boat. We had to take the dragon head off because it didn't fit with all of us, but we kept the tail. And you'll also notice how cramped the seats are and the girl who later on slaps me. Here's a boat with a roof. Here's a picture of the snow cone that gave me my first brain freeze. Here's us in the water next to a pretty big boat. And look, our other white boat is getting blocked off by the bigger boat. Notice how our boat is going in the wrong direction and how close we are to being submerged. And here's a picture of the grown-ups carrying the boat out of the water after a long day. And I'm not in this picture. I wanted to get to land as soon as possible. Here's a picture of me during Halloween. I dressed up as a ninja. I think it was the Halloween after the bunny. And there's a plushie of a Neopet in the background. Do you guys remember Neopets? All my Neopets are probably dead now. Here's a picture of me with a giant pencil. It's actually a model rocket, but it looks like a pencil. Isn't that adorable? Remember my science fair video where I launched rockets? Yeah, this wasn't that time. This is a completely different model rocket. And here's me in a tub of animal plushies. And this bird plushie right here was actually my favorite. I got them from someone else's birthday. It was in a goodie bag. It was a pirate-themed birthday. So it was like, you know, a little tiny parrot. I really liked that bird. His name was Birdie, and now he's gone. And here's me dressed up as Galileo. Yay! A new video is done! Sorry it's been like a month since my life.
So like I said, I don't know what this one's about. I don't know what the joke is. I just don't get it. So I will make you an offer. I will give $20 to anyone that explains what this comic is trying to do.
So immediately after posting the Garfield video, which, if for whatever reason you haven't seen, you should go watch it, I had a bunch of people try and figure out what the second Garfield comic was. And you guys got it almost immediately, like within minutes. I saw a bunch of other comments out there that had the right explanation, but it was the user Solo McCraft's comment that I saw first, and it was the most upvoted. Some people probably spent a good 10 minutes typing out all these explanations. I'm sorry, but this guy was first. So after trying to figure out how to message him on YouTube, I asked if he had a Twitter. He said he did, and we talked there. You got a PayPal? No, I'm only 15. Crap. So we decided that I would pay him via a Steam gift card. I just wanted to mention that and say that I was true to my promise of $23. Except Steam only has $20 gift cards, so I guess $3 is still on the table. So now, what you've all been waiting for, let me explain what this comic was trying to do. So that is a teeth brush, and that is teeth paste, and that is John walking up to it, and okay, you know how adults and dentists tell kids that the amount of toothpaste you should put on a toothbrush should be the size of a pea? Well, that's what John was trying to say. They say you should use the amount of toothpaste that is similar to the size of a pea. See, this word pea is supposed to be the pea as in the vegetable pea. I think that's what threw me off the most, is because I kept thinking that this was a potty joke. Then John is going to brush his teeth, and he says, Garfield, that's not pea-sized. And he says this because Garfield is holding a teeth brush with a mountain of teeth paste. I thought this was like a spray or something. And then Garfield says, yes, it is, because the teeth paste is pea-sized because he has a massive pea. That's why it's green. This is a pea as in the vegetable. I don't know why it's not round, though. But I get the comic now! That was stupid. I just want to talk about this comment on the video I saw. That's not Garfield. That's your own original character. Garfield! And I really like that. And he's drawn like this. Ah, I love it. See, that's Garfield, and this is Garfield. And okay, there were a couple of people who redrew the comic and sent it to me. And it's funny because some of them, I don't think they knew what was happening either. So I'm just going to read some of the comics that people sent to me. So these three comics right here, they were actually correct. They got it right. I like how this one says, not as excited. There's a toothbrush, and then John's walking up to the toothbrush. And they basically all say the same thing. They say you should use a pea-sized amount of toothpaste. And then he's gonna go brush his teeth, and I like how this one has a massive toothbrush. And then they all go, Garfield, that's not pea-sized. And then you see Garfield with the mountain of toothpaste, and he's like, yes it is, because he has another pea. I like this one because it's like actually round. And all the rest didn't get it right. And this one, I really like the facial expressions. There's like, he's walking up and he says, they say you should use the really big toothpaste. He's about to go, and he's, Garfield, that's not paste. And then he's, yes it is. Oh, I love it. This one, it feels like a computer should be reading this one.
Here is the bathroom, where the comic will take place. John walks in looking awake as ever. They said to always brush your teeth with toothpaste. He talks about what his dentist said. He gets his, IDK. Garfield, that's not a piece. Garfield interrupts him by doing, listen. He basically pulls up the water pipe and water goes everywhere. John is upset. Then Garfield pulls up the sewage drain as well, so there is gross liquid everywhere. John is scared now. Garfield explains it all in one sentence. Yes, it is.
Good job, man. This one, I love the creative take on it. First, it's called garnish. And then John comes in. They say you should use the big toothbrush to remove all your last night mistakes. And then he has another giant toothbrush. Garfunkel, that's not a toothbrush. I know, John, it's a crack pipe. Well, life has no real meaning anyway. Ah, that was great. I like how he took what this was supposed to be a toothbrush and made it look like a crack pipe. And to be honest, it looks more like a crack pipe than a toothbrush. So good job. And this one was made like 20 minutes after I posted the video. It was drawn super fast. And I like how they drew Garfield. How I drew Garfield. So he goes, Garfield, that's not pieces. Translation, that's not your toothbrush. He takes it. And then translation, to fight John for toothbrush ownership, Garfield unleashes his secret power. Yes, it is. His secret power is being able to control a green slime. So this next one was drawn by a comic friend of mine. He makes a comic called Doggy Bag. He's on Tumblr and iFunny. I actually collabed and made a comic with him before. So this one is actually a remake of the Fire comic. And I just love all the attention to detail in this one. It starts by saying, by James R., age 6, illustrated by Doggy Bag, and has her Twitter, and he calls it Garfield. And so we see John saying happy birthday, and then wah, and then firefighters go, where's the fire? And then John goes, my cat just having a bee day. I like how the cake is falling apart. The beep beep, and the first beep looks funny, like how it was in the first one. And John goes, oh no. For some reason, I just love how lifeless Garfield looks in this comic. So anyway, those were all the comics. Sorry if I missed any. Thanks for watching. We're not going to do an end card, and I'll see you next time. Mwah. No, I'm not going to do the mwah this time.
Did you know that 99% of everything I've ever said on this channel has been written out ahead of time, including the mispronunciation of the word percent? It would be 100% scripted, but, you know, the drawing challenge videos, you can't really script that kind of content, so... Or can you? But every other video has had a script, and that includes the worst video I've ever made, my very first one.
So you know those books you make in a...
I'm gonna stop it right there because I physically cannot watch another nanosecond of my first video. I want to take it down so bad, but I'm keeping it up so you can see how much I've improved. Because like it or not, the very first thing you make of something is going to be bad. But you have to make the bad thing first so you know how to make things good. The point is, even that sad excuse of a video was scripted, and today I want to talk about what goes on in the script writing process and how I get inspiration and some tips for writing better scripts, because if I write something I'm not 100% happy with, then I'm stuck working on a crappy video for the next month, like this one. People often tell me, oh, I want to make YouTube videos, but my life's super boring. I wish I could have an exciting life like yours. And I always respond with, my most popular series is about me talking about working at a minimum wage small local sandwich shop. A script does not need to be an edge of your seat high stakes level story. It needs to be an entertaining story. And I believe if told in a certain way, any story can be an entertaining story. The first piece of advice that I can give that will immediately improve your scripts is, drumroll please, in 5, 4, 3, getting to the point. Because I do animation, the longer the script I make, the longer the video will be, and the longer my team and I will have to spend working on the video, and the more depressed I'll get. So I've subconsciously gotten into the habit of writing shorter scripts that get to the point and cut out unnecessary and unfunny details. I feel like the American school system has brainwashed kids into thinking that the best way to express ideas is through the form of a 5-paragraph essay. Now, have you ever read a 5-paragraph essay that you wrote? They're boring as shit. And most schools require essays to have a minimum word count, so we are now training the next generation into purposely writing long-winded and wordy thoughts that could have been shortened down to a sentence. You've all written essays. You know all about repeating ideas you've already written, or saying the same thing over and over, or reiterating thoughts more than once, or echoing points an overabundant amount of times, or looking up words on thesaurus.com to hit that 500 minimum word count before. Well, you may not be ready to hear this, but you will not need to write 5-paragraph essays in your daily life. Shakespeare knew about this when in the 1300s he wrote, "Brevity is the soul of wit." Which is ironic, because he really liked to use a lot of unnecessary words. I once clicked on a video that was titled something like, "Top 10 Scary Things That Have Happened When Hiking" or something. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good video to watch at 3 in the morning. And I swear, the video started out like,
"Whether it's to have a healthier lifestyle or to see the great outdoors, hiking is a wonderful activity enjoyed by millions of people across the globe of America. But sometimes, this wonderful activity enjoyed by billions can sometimes turn deadly."
Why are you defining what a hike is? We all know! Just show me the blurry photos of Bigfoot already until I'm too scared to fall asleep! So, how do I come up with these video ideas? Well, I start by thinking, what can I rant about for hours? Something that makes me go, "Don't get me started on blank!" And then I do get started and I write those thoughts on a Google Doc. And sometimes my thoughts are jumbled and incoherent, like I've been up all night watching Bigfoot videos, but I don't care. I just need to get these thoughts out of my head and splattered onto a piece of paper. And sometimes just starting to write will make me think of new ideas and I go, "And another thing!" And I repeat that process until the script's done. And then when I'm done writing the script, it's actually Not even close to being done. Once I've finished writing, I send the script off to some of my friends and the Amazing, and they look over it with the freshest of eyes, and they'll give me notes saying, hey, you misspelled percent here, or hey, I have a joke you can add, or hey, wait, James, I thought I was your friend. And then I'll choose which of their jokes is the funniest and that I'm going to steal. Here's a fun little YouTuber behind-the-scenes fact. Since 2018, there's a circle of friends I have where we all trade and read each other's scripts and make suggestions and pitch jokes. And once I'm done reading someone else's script, I get to watch their finished video a month or two or 8 months later and see if the jokes I pitched made the cut. And then I get to smile to myself because no one knows that I was the one who wrote that joke because none of us credit each other because none of us care. Literally, the last 30 seconds of my Suobwe Part 4 video was written by this kid named Infamous Swoosh. I wrote in my script, conclusion goes here. And he just wrote one for me, and I went, yeah, I'll use that. And not credit you. But it's okay, because we all don't credit each other equally, so it's a win-win. Everyone in the friend circle gets to look funnier than they actually are. Some days, I'll stumble onto a topic that I just know I'm going to make a video about, and then the scripts are a breeze to write. But then there are some days where I'm content with the world and I got nothing that gets me started. But I can't just not make a script that month, otherwise what would I make a video about? Random thoughts? I still gotta put bread on the table, and also my team would be out of a job. So on those days, you're basically forcing yourself to be creative on demand, which is not the easiest thing to do. But fortunately, I have a few tricks to get the creative juices flowing. It's called drugs. I'm just kidding. It's called Adderall. Wait. Okay, but for real, I do have this really complicated technique to get ideas, so write these steps down, okay? What I do is I get a pen and a notebook, put on some lo-fi, and just write. About nothing specific, just whatever my brain thinks is important. I am writing right now, with my left hand. Most people are right-handed, but I am special and am left-handed. I'm glad my teachers didn't force me to be right-handed. They were more concerned about my messy handwriting and horrible spelling. Usually the ideas don't come that quickly, but you get what I'm talking about. So many times at conventions, I'll be on a panel and people will ask for advice about starting a YouTube channel, and everyone on the panel will say, if you want to start a YouTube channel, you just gotta do it. You know, hit the upload button a couple of times. And I feel kind of bad for people who traveled far and wide to a convention and paid for a hotel and waited in line just to hear a bunch of YouTubers say, you just gotta do it. And it sounds cliche, but it's true. We either say that or be more entertaining, and that's rude, so. Recently, I went on tour performing a live show called Scribble Showdown. I'll talk more about it in the next video, don't worry. And before every show, we had a Q&A panel, and the most frequent question we got asked was, can you read my screenplay, and how do you get motivation? And the answer to that question is, no, and you don't. You get disciplined. Discipline comes before motivation. If you have a project you want to start or a skill you want to learn, you can't wait around for motivation to hit. Sometimes it doesn't come. Instead, you have to set a schedule where you say, okay, on this day, from this time to this time, I'm going to put in the effort to achieve my goal. And if you don't know where to start, a good first step would be to just get your goals into writing. Get your thoughts out onto something physical. So grab a pen and a piece of paper and just ask your friends to read your screenplay because I'm too busy. So busy that I didn't even have time to record an end card. I have never played Fortnite, but we're going to be playing a lot of it today, so buckle up. If I am going to get cracked, then I should probably download the game. Wait, what's an epic launcher? I just want to play Fortnite. Luckily, this endeavor won't break the bank because Fortnite is a free game. Really? I get to experience all of this for free? Today, we're going to be playing 100 games of Fortnite to see if we can actually improve, develop a skill, and try and earn that elusive victory royale. I mean, we're not playing Fortnite. I'm playing Fortnite. You're watching a YouTube video. Now, before we get into any games, let's first... Alright, I'm just gonna go with my standard username, no big deal, and... Oh. Okay, yeah, that one's probably on me. The game's been out for 7 years, so I hope whoever has that account has been earning me a lot of dubs and make me look good. Okay, I guess we should keep a low profile. We don't want to get stream sniped, you know? So after hours of brainstorming, I settled on the name GatorGuy333, 'cause I'm the Gator Guy.
333. There are two popular modes to play Fortnite. There's the classic Battle Royale mode with all the features and doodads that made the game as popular as it is, like doing this. And then there's Zero Build, where there's none of that shit. Now, which mode is the more competitive mode? Whichever mode I'm playing. For my very first game, I decided to play the classic Battle Royale mode, baby. We're playing Fortnite like how God intended. Builds on, ranked off, skin default. What, you think I'm gonna buy a skin? You think I'm gonna spend money on a free game? Pfft, get out of here. Oh my God, is that Peter Griffin? All right, enough talk. Let's start. I would like to remind you that I'm playing Fortnite for the very first time.
Who's shooting me? Oh God.
I didn't have a friend on call to tell me what buttons to press or give me emotional support. Like, no one told me, hey, don't drop that mythic gun for shield blasters. Shield blasters aren't even that good. Also, my go-to video games are Mario Maker and Tetris. I'm not really a first-person kind of shooter. What do you mean it's technically a third-person shooter? Who are the other two people? Instead of doing all of these unnecessary side quests, right now, my one and only quest is to be the best and not rest until I conquest all the sweats.
Do I take fall damage in this game?
Don't worry, Past James. You'll find out soon enough. I landed in fencing fields, and the second my feet touched the ground, I started getting shot at. I went inside a building and started breaking random objects, hoping that there was a gun inside them.
This is horrible sound.
And I grabbed a rare Striker AR. The very first gun in my Fortnite career and it's already a rare? Let's go, dude. But then I found an uncommon shotgun just lying on the floor, and I had to pick which gun I was going to take to battle because my inventory was already full of priceless items. I decided to keep my rare gun because it had more bullets and because I like the color blue more than green. So,
can I only hold one gun, or is it like my inventory is full? Who am I talking to? Oh! Ah! You stood no chance, bro. You stood no chance.
In that moment, I had gotten what I thought was my very first Fortnite kill. This, however, was not another player, but rather one of the many NPCs just wandering around the map. But I didn't know that at the time, so there was nothing but pure joy on my face. Almost immediately, I got a second Fortnite kill, and my suspicions that these were actually computer players were growing.
Is this a bot? Why can't I... They, like, didn't hurt me at all.
I started shooting what looked like a final boss, but had run out of bullets. Uh-oh. I ran away, narrowly dodging every shot being fired at me. I healed up, found another gun, tried shooting the boss again, ran out of bullets again, and then I ran away. Again. Hey, that's two confrontations where I didn't die. Clearly, I'm a natural. I knew I had to get away from the danger, so I started building a ramp.
And, like... We're building a staircase. Ah! Oh, God! No! No, that's how it happened? That's how I went out?
So, yes, there is fall damage in Fortnite. You know what? Build mode sucks. Build mode's what killed me. We're done doing that. We're doing no build from now on. Now, before we get into game two, I would like to briefly explain some of the fundamentals I learned from playing that I wish someone explained to me. Starting with the... Guns are going to be your main tool for killing, and every gun has a rarity assigned to it, ranging from common, uncommon, rare, epic, mythic, and legendary. Those last two might be switched, actually, I never knew which adjective was better. But either way, orange and yellow guns are more rare than rare guns, and more epic than epic ones. I'm sorry if you already know this, okay? This is just how I process things, okay? I have to make a YouTube video about it. An uncommon sniper rifle could have the best scope in the game, while an epic one could have no scope at all. The epic sniper will do more damage and have a faster reload time, but if you can't hit anyone due to a lack of scope, which gun's actually better? Doesn't matter for me, I still couldn't hit anyone regardless. Also, this is an Overwatch 2. You have a limited amount of ammo, which in the early game is something you really have to be mindful of. I learned that my first day.
I'm out.
You'll just have to play the game to figure out which guns click with you, but my favorite guns are shotguns. And I have the data to back it up. The damage they do, as well as you not even needing good aim to do damage, make them a great choice for getting kills.
fun. I'm having fun.
Unfortunately, you can't just go walking around with every shotgun you find. You only have 5 inventory slots that you have to use wisely. And you'll want to save at least 2 of those slots for a healing item and a specialty item. So really, you should only be going around with a maximum of 3 guns. But I'm not here to backseat game, alright? You can do whatever you want. It's a free game. Okay, enough explaining. Let's get back to match. I landed in fencing fields and immediately started getting shot at again. Not a super great start, I know.
How did you get a weapon so fast?
I found a gun, but with 3 other people shooting me, I decided my best option was to hide in a dumpster. Which turned out to be a terrible hiding spot because the boss lady found me in 5 seconds. And for the next 4 minutes, I grabbed any gun or grenade I could find and started using them on all the grunts shooting me. And I was slowly starting to pick them off.
What's up? What's up, guys? How's it going? How many kills is this? 1?
I was gaming so hard that I didn't even realize that this right here was my first actual Fortnite kill. XXX Dark Tonics XX. I'm sorry I had to do it to you, but you were the first player I ever eliminated. I hope knowing this fact makes you feel a sense of pride and accomplishment in me. My KD ratio is now perfectly balanced, so that's good. I took a moment to figure out the controls, and I started taking down some more players.
Let me see if I can, zoom in. Okay, I can crouch. Nope, that's... Oh, okay. Is there, a... Oh, if I hold... Oh, that's how I do it. What are you? Rare, and you have 30... Oh, wait, my other gun had 105 bullets.
With the boss eliminated, I opened a vault with a key card and found 2 epic guns and a rocket launcher. Also, on the way to the vault, I may or may not have dropped a mythic gun for some shield blasters. Thankfully, no one saw, so that would have been embarrassing.
Where's Tilted Towers? What was that?
A giant floating island appeared in the sky, and I decided to head up it.
See ya!
In the middle of the island, I started to capture a flag, and when I successfully captured it, I was rewarded with even more mythic guns that I didn't pick up for some reason. I'm sorry, rewatching this footage is just as painful for you as it is for me, okay?
Supersonic racing. Everybody was supersonic racing. Come on, load, load, load! 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 Dude, I don't want to count any chickens or anything, but are we doing this?
I saw the storm closing in, and then I noticed...
Oh, there's only 2 people! It's me and one other guy!
And then this amazing clutch happened.
Okay, load, 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 load. Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where'd you go? Where is she? There she is. What do I do now?
Well, that just happened. My second game ever, and I already got a dub? Oh, you? Well, all of you astute, sweaty Fortnite players watching might have noticed that my final opponent kinda sucked ass. I mean, look at him. We're both in a completely open area, and this player can't even land a single hit on me. And they made it into the top 2? That's because no matter how good you are at Fortnite, after every round, there's 1 winner and 99 losers. And if every player has an equal chance of winning, that would mean you're still losing 99% of the time. And if you were playing a video game where you lost 99% of the time, you would probably stop having fun and never play the game again. Or not, I don't know, I've never played Dark Souls. So what Epic Games does to remedy this is they fill up every match with bots who kind of suck shit. This way, you can get some easy kills on other players and make it further into every game. At least you got 3 kills in 20th place, right? That doesn't feel as bad as getting 99th. However, the unintended consequence of this is that now, after every kill you get, there's a little thought in the back of your head thinking, did I actually kill someone with a soul, or is Fortnite going easy on me? So there's a pretty big chance that my first Fortnite kill, XXX Dark Tonic XXX, wasn't even a real person that could feel proud of me. Chances are, none of these other players are real.
Here are my opponents.
Eventually, we'll be at a high enough level where it'll start to feel like, a challenge.
We're just gonna keep trucking along. Let's start map.
No, 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 no. Okay. Oh, I'm out. I'm out. Cool. Hello. Hello.
Okay, I guess we'll chalk up those last two games to beginner's luck. Surely things will go differently in Matt.
A cabbage and a coconut. Cool. Let me just bite into that. And shotgun and shotgun and shotgun. Made me waste all my ammo, dude. Okay, anyone at all? Hello? Too easy! Too-
Technically speaking, no one has killed me yet. At least in match 2, I was the one who eliminated the last player, but matches 3 and 4 just handed me a crown on a fluffy pillow. You know, I wanted to do this really cool thing where we looked at spreadsheets and tracked my progress, but all the data's gonna get kinda messed up if I just keep winning all the time. Why learn the game or develop a strategy if everything I'm doing results in a win? It's upsetting that I'm already perfect. I hope this is still a good idea for a video. We still have a whole lot more Fortnite to get through, so let's just see if we can stumble and fumble our way into even more victory.
Come on. Ah! Ah! Oh, this is what loss feels like.
I think those 3 wins in a row made me a little cocky. I mean, no one has been able to stop me, so I wasn't trying anything special. When I saw another player, I would just do my normal strategy of standing still and shooting, and it got me 15th place. But this does prove that I can be stopped. Finally, we've faced a worthy opponent. Sheeny Shear. F*** you, Sheeny Shear. Oh well, I guess we couldn't win them all. I mean, I still have more wins than losses at this point. As long as the next 50 games go well, then I won't be complaining.
I was looking at the map, bro!
How do I thank the bus driver? I would love to thank them, but I unfortunately do not know the button to thank them.
Gee! I don't know what this is, but I'm afraid to use it. I don't know what that does! I don't know what that does! Whoa, 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 whoa! No. Oh boy. Oh no. Ooh! Oh! Oh! Please don't! Please don't! Oh! One of these days, we're gonna learn how to thank the bus driver. $99! Oh, you're not f***ing around?
Well, me neither!
I don't know what I'm doing, you guys. Wish I knew how to thank the bus driver. The guy. Oh! What is this? Medallion. Cool. I want you. Look at the camera, floof. Camera's right there, floof. What the? What did? What just happened? I was in the middle of a grind. How come when I shoot people, it takes like 4 or 5 hits? I'm starting to get in heated gamer moments. Am I just bad at the game? Oh, I am bad at the game. Oh! Oh! What is this? How do I get you here? You got me.
Cool.
B? Oh! It's B! That was bad, that was bad, that was bad.
This match I started doing pretty well in.
We can't keep doing this. We can't.
I landed in Pleasant Plaza and got 3 kills without taking any damage.
We got the jump on him.
I started getting even more kills and was picking up some pretty good loot.
I even picked up these three medallions, not knowing what they did. And before I knew it, there was only me and one person left.
There's only one person left?
This hadn't happened since those first three games, which I frankly didn't deserve to win.
Where are you?
I was upset, yes, but I can accept when I've been outplayed.
How did that happen?
In this match, I got my first and only kill with a cluster clinger right at the very start. Overall, I was able to get 9 kills this match. There were a lot of close calls in this game, but I was always able to find health packs and heal back up. As long as I stayed in the storm circle, I was going to let the other players come to me. And my patience paid off because once again, I ended up in the top 2 and I started to get nervous.
Oh, fiddlesticks. No, 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 no.
I made some dumb mistakes. Like once again, not picking up those legendary guns that were on the ground. What? I only got 3 kills this match, but I made it to the top 3 with a legendary run-and-pump shotgun. If you've played Fortnite, you know this is the most superior shotgun out of all the shotguns. I saw the last 2 players fighting by the storm, and instead of waiting for them to kill each other, I sniped Banana Joe 934 from afar. I was in second place yet again, but this time I had the last player in my sights.
Where are you? Where are you? I know about that running over people trick.
No! Ooh. I want to talk about the top 2 jitters. Dude, I can't describe how anxiety-inducing it is being one of the last 2 players alive. You have narrowly survived every challenge and bot thrown at you for the last 20 minutes, and now the only thing that stands between you and a victory royale is the best player in the game. Getting into the top 2, I would literally be shaking and making mistakes that I couldn't afford to make. With so many close games, I decided to call it a night, and as my head rested on my pillow, I only had one question on my mind. How? By this point, Fortnite had started to slip into my subconscious. I was having dreams about Fortnite. One time I was lying in bed and I heard this sound. And I thought, there's someone nearby. I need to kill them. I pretty much got the gist of Fortnite. I had been to all the places on the map, I knew what every gun did, but I couldn't get over the second place hump. I needed to elevate my Fortnite skills. I needed to consult the Is anyone going to interrupt me? No? Look, not getting outside help was never part of the challenge, okay? Is it fair that everyone else already knows the buttons when I didn't even know what button used the scope? How am I supposed to know that? No one ever told me you can pick up the business turret after it's been thrown. And I'll never be able to pick them up. Here is the official guide to Fortnite. It's full of useful information like telling me where Tilted Towers or Loot Lake is. Oh, here's something. Surviving the end game. It says you need to prepare to improvise. To survive this phase of the game, you'll want to have a few structures you can build. Okay, maybe this won't be helpful. Ah, here we go. You can claim a victory royale without building a single structure in the game, but you'll need sharp reflexes and to be able to move deftly to pull it off. Okay, so skill issue is what the official guidebook says. I was kind of hoping for some, I don't know, useful strategies. Something like, here's a link to an aimbot. So I decided to ask a real human for some help, and my friend Rush told me, hey, did you know there's a setting you can turn on that lets you visually see what direction noises are coming from? What? So now, even if my ears can't actually hear footsteps, the game will tell me, hey, there's footsteps to your right. Someone is definitely nearby. Now, this setting is for hearing impaired people, so is me using this setting as an able-bodied hearing man cheating, kind of? Yeah, kind of. But I need every bit of help I can get. And I bet most of you play with this setting on, too, and you hear just fine. Now, let's see if we can apply this useful tool as we head into
Oh, I have some bad news. I don't normally work with external hard drives, so I didn't realize these things were made out of eggshells. I was storing all of my footage on an external hard drive, and I guess I forgot to put it on its tiny pillow or something, because after I stored over 300 gigs worth of footage onto it, it stopped working. I took it to a data recovery specialist, and they quoted me $950 to repair it. Oh boy, I mean, I gotta go for it. The stuff on this hard drive's priceless. But then they were like, actually, there's nothing we can do, idiot, loser. You see these pictures we sent you? That means it's too damaged beyond repair. What were you doing to this hard drive? Were you throwing it on the ground? Were you hitting it with a hammer? So, unfortunately, we will never get to see games 63 through 99.
Hey, are you crying?
No. Who are you?
I am your fairy Fortnite godmother. I'm here to help you.
Are you going to use magic to fix my hard drive?
What? Do you think I have magical powers?
I don't... Yes?
Magic can't change the fact that you saved all of your important, irreplaceable footage onto a single hard drive, stupid. But luckily, my child, you don't need any magic. You have Fortnite Reboot. Did you know that Fortnite automatically saves your last 50 or so matches as a replay file that you can go back and watch later? This is a miracle! Because of replay files, we didn't lose any gameplay footage. We did, however, lose the webcam, so you won't get to see my live reaction or witty commentary during any of these games, which sucks, I know. I did this whole bit where I kept losing, so I became a sweat.
We're cracked! We're going!
But I'm just happy we're able to recover any gameplay footage at all, and I've also learned to back everything up. So with that little hiccup taken care of, how did I do with visual sounds turned on? Well, let's take a look at match...
Boom. He's gone. Ooh. Take that medallion, and there's a bunch of legendary guns, and I actually grab two of them. Two legendary guns. Circle real small. And then... Victory Royale. Very anticlimactic fight. But actually, now that we have a replay, so you, and me. So they have, like, very low health. You have this health. Yeah, gotta get out of the storm, bro. Get out of the storm. Couldn't make it out. Gator guy's the winner.
You might say that a win is a win, but I kind of wanted a win where I pulled the trigger to get. So I did pretty well in match 63, but match 64, I got 81st place. So, am I actually getting any better?
There goes my crown.
In match 65 and 66, I got second place back to back.
Here I am looking for the last guy. Here's the last guy sitting on the roof. Here's his business turret looking. Both are right here on top of each other. Don't see each other. We're running. I still don't see him. Ooh, turret gets a lot of damage on me. I run for cover in there. Turret still shoots me through the wall. And then this guy just waits for me to come out of the building. Yep. And then finishes me off.
Nothing really special happened for the next few games besides getting 99th place on match 73 and getting 79th place on match 79th, which was the only time that the place number matched the match number, so that's pretty cool, I think. But then big things happened in match 8. It had taken me so long to complete 100 games that Fortnite changed seasons. There was a new ancient Greek-themed update that's totally old news by the time I get this video done. Parts of the map changed, my favorite business turret was removed, and my level was reset to level 1. This was my first time playing in the new season. I was unfamiliar with all the new locations and items, but I managed to get 5 kills and make it to the top 2. Me and the last player were shooting each other on our own hills, and then I decided it was time for some finishing moves. Is the storm getting close? Because I think I hear some thunder!
Oh, look at that. Almost missed. Exploded the tree right behind him. And they're like, oh, we're doing a lightning fight? We can do a lightning fight. Bam, oh, and that's it. Oh, they didn't want to overdo it. Oh, that's nice.
Then, in my very next match, I got 6 kills and was once again in the top 2.
Oh, I hope it didn't glitch out right there.
I had done it. My very first Fortnite win.
We both, have not loaded our guns. She misses. I hit her. She misses again. Really? Look, we're both reloading at the same time. As soon as I'm done, boom! Final kill.
It didn't really feel like a clutched game, you know? There weren't really any pro gamer moves. We were both running around fumbling to see who could load their gun first. But we're not getting points for style, okay? This is a win that I finally earned. Of course, you'll never get to see how I reacted in this moment. The best I can do is an artistic recreation. I kept grinding the 100 games to see if I could earn any more victories, and for a while, I couldn't even get back to the top 2. I knew I was running out of chances to clutch out more wins until I played Match 90. Now, this footage is a little corrupted. I landed in Rebel's Roost and started exploring a house that isn't loading in the replay footage, and I found a legendary gun inside of a regular old chest. I know it sounds unbelievable, you just had to be there. Then I talked to an NPC that I'd never seen before, Mina. I gave her a job to be my buddy, and she did something I didn't know an NPC could do. Every 30 seconds, Mina would scan the nearby area, revealing anything important. Chests, ammo boxes, even other players would become illuminated. This was amazing. I had a legendary gun, and now with Mina's scanner, no one could sneak up on me. I understand why people play with hacks now. This power is amazing. I think I'm in love. I got to the top 2, but once again, I couldn't keep my composure and choked right at the very end.
And then I'm healing up behind a rock, and then I didn't even see him over there. In a 1v1, I was unable to clutch it out.
That's now 8 times I've made it to second place, with only one of those times I was able to kill the last player. After getting 45th place in Match 99, I decided it was time to revamp my strategy. For my 100th game, I was going to do something no other Fortnite player could do. I was going to study every game I ever played to see if I could find any patterns to help me win. What's a Fortnite coach? We can look back and learn from our mistakes. We can study the Oh yes, baby, it's spreadsheet time. My favorite time besides snack time. I don't know about you, but I had just as much fun filling out the spreadsheet as I did playing Fortnite. And this time, I didn't lose the footage. Now let's see if we can find anything useful in all these numbers. Taking a look at all the places we got, you can clearly see it's a little all over the place. When I started this quest, I was expecting to see a graph more like this, where I would start off bad and then over time get better and better, getting closer to the number 1 rank. But in Fortnite, skill level does not necessarily translate to a better placement. Sometimes you and another player land in the exact same spot, and the first gun you grab is a sniper rifle, and all you see is the magnified barrel of a shotgun, and other times you can make it to the top 25 without ever seeing another soul. I did notice that in my first 31 games, I was getting a pretty low placement, but then once I started to get the hang of the game, I would more consistently make it into the top 10. I mean, sometimes I would still die quickly, but it was less frequent. Now let's see if we can find a pattern in the data that would translate into getting a better place. Maybe the secret to getting in the top 10 is getting a lot of kills. If we compare the amount of kills I got each match with the placement, we see... Okay, I'm seeing a little bit of correlation here. The more kills we have, the better we tend to do. But sometimes I got 2 kills and made it to 79th place, and other times I got 1 kill and made it to the top 11. Technically speaking, you don't even need to get a single kill to get a victory royale if the other players are shit enough. But I think you'll be surprised to see what happens when we compare the placement with the length of every match. Now that's some correlation. The matches that were longer, we did better in. I think I'll apply this strategy to my 100th game. In order to not die, you have to stay alive. I'm a genius. Now let's shift gears and talk about every player who ever killed me.
Boo!
Here are all of their IP addresses, and here are their mother's houses, and most importantly, here is everyone's recorded playtime. Now we can determine who among my killers don't shower, and that'll make me feel better to losing to them. If we add up all of my killers' playtimes, we get an average playtime of 301 hours and 37 minutes. Now gamers, if you've played a video game for over 300 hours, are you considered a sweat? I honestly don't know where we should draw the line, but let's just say for the sake of this video, if you're above a 301 average, you're a sweat. However, since it took forever to make this video, and Fortnite changed seasons yet again, we can check back in on these gamers in 3 months to see if the players we deemed as sweats do indeed play more Fortnite than everyone else. Some people played a little, some people played a lot, and someone even quit the game entirely after killing me. Now, I don't want to sound mean, but these gamers played an average of 50 hours and 6 minutes of Fortnite. I said mean, which is like what, 33 minutes a day or 3.9 hours a week? That just sounds like a nice Saturday. Now, what can we do with all this information? Nothing. This is just a reminder to set your account to private because people on the internet are weird. Now, that's all well and good, but which gun is the most deadly to us? Here's a list of everything I ever died to in the game. Looking at the data, we actually have a tie for most deadly gun, with shotguns and ARs both getting 30 kills on me, and the most deadly rarity being a pretty close tie with rare guns getting 24 kills and epic guns getting 25 kills. So we want to be extra cautious if our opponent has a rare or epic shotgun or AR. Someone write that down. I really wanted to see if there was something in the data that would definitively prove that I was improving at the game. I wasn't happy with just looking at the placements because they were all over the place, but I think I found something that does indeed prove I am getting better. My accuracy. Plugging in all the data, we get this scatter plot, which looks exactly like a target I would shoot during practice. But if we look at the scatterplot trend, my average accuracy at game 1 was around 22%, and by game 99, we're getting an accuracy of 31%, boys! That's 9% more accurate! That's improvement in my book! This abundant arithmetic is all well and good, but there's something we're missing. Which gun that I was shooting gets the most kills? Oh, you'll have to excuse me. I gotta get going. I'm hosting the... How are you guns all doing tonight? Before I give out these awards, I would like to give an honorary best assist trophy to the business turret. On record, the business turret was able to assist with 15 different kills. Unfortunately, business turret is unable to be here, so Porta Bunker will be accepting this award on their behalf. Alright. In third place, with 24 kills, we have Rare Shotguns. Thank you, Rare Shotguns. You're always there for me. In second place, with 27 kills, we have the Uncommon AR. Nice job, buddy. Keep up the good work. And the winner of the 2024 Fortnite Gun Awards are, with 33 kills, my eyes see the Uncommon Shotgun. So, going into game 100... we need to make sure we're equipped with a shotgun that's uncommon. Actually, this whole thing's stupid. Just because I got the most kills with the uncommon shotgun doesn't mean it's the best gun. It means it's the most common. I mean, uncommon. I'm sorry for wasting everyone's time. Let's just get back into the... By this point, I knew that I lost the footage for games 63 through 99. This was my last chance to get a victory royale on camera. It's do or die. For this legendary match, my girlfriend did something really sweet and gifted me a skin of a guy in an alligator costume, meaning I could finally be the real Gator Guy 333 and still not spend any money on a free game. Thanks, babe. During the first 99 matches, I would sometimes add silly little commentary even though no one was ever going to watch the footage.
Honey, did you leave the chest on the kitchen counter again?
But for this momentous match, I was going to remain completely silent. I needed all of my focus to be on the game. I landed in Zeus's Pantheon and immediately got 3 kills. A very close call. One more bullet would have done the trick. The most important match of my life almost ended with me in 84th place. So, admittedly, combing through the 21 hours of footage to fill out my spreadsheets took quite some time. So much time that they changed the game once again. They added a new item called the Legendary Banana. What does that do? Is it a weapon? Food items normally heal you, so why is it legendary? I decided to take the banana with me and figure out what it did later. After not seeing any chatter, I headed out of the Pantheon to a bunker opening nearby. I waited a bit to see if the coast was clear, then I made my way down and looted up. Heading outside, I saw an NPC. Ooh, I think someone's about to get a job. I couldn't find the source of the bullets, so I hopped into a sports car and drove away. But when I got out, I guess now's a good time to learn what this legendary banana does. It was over. My 100th match, and all I got was 16th place. And that's when I learned you can read a description of what an item does in the tab menu. 100 games in, and I'm